First speaker is Ginia Kinilopoulou, who's going to talk about competition law and the music industry. Please.
Thank you very much. A very specific part of competition law, actually, relevant product market definition and how we have, or how this has been approached by competition authorities in the UK, the US, and the European Commission itself. And we can see that even though we've been talking about creativity, innovation, innovative product, ideas, creators, and so on and so forth, the competition authorities do not have the same approach and do not have the same view towards our notion of creativity and innovation. We will get to that later on. The starting point for this project, which is an ongoing PhD thesis, was a merger from 2010 between Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Those interested in the music industry have followed the story, I presume, closely. Adjectives attached to Live Nation and Ticketmaster merger case were Monster Nation, Satan's Box Office, Microsoft of the Music World, and many other not so, let's say, pretty remarks about this specific case. What I was interested in when studying this case as a master's student was what it reflected for the state of the music industry itself. Why was this merger case important? What can it tell us about the business model of the music industry at the time and of the past 15 years, if you wish? Live Nation created, wanted to create, basically, the first artist-to-fan integrated experience by offering a merger of products rather than just a concert ticket or just a recording or, let's say, just merchandise. It wanted to offer all of the above in a bundle directly to the end consumer. So we can see, if we start talking competition law terminology, that from the demand, from the supply side, we have industrial lines being a bit blurred, concepts brought together. The final product that would reach the end consumer is not what we perceived it to be in the traditional business model sense of the music industries. These firms are trying to offer innovative product to the end consumer, right? Live Nation being one most prominent example. So what I believe that this merger case represents is that what is on offer from the supply side reflects the changes in business model of the music industries. Let's see why we believe that there is some change in the business model of the music industries, not only from the supply, but also from the demand side. Let's look into what consumers want, something that has been thoroughly presented the past 2 days here. We have seen that also consumer preferences have changed the past 15 years since the digital innovation. Consumers are able to send direct or indirect feedback to record companies and to concert promoters, if you wish, as well, attaching or detaching value from value proposition proposed to them. And instead of having a traditional top-bottom approach in the industry, for the first time ever, we're having a bottom-up, what business academics might call value co-creation approach. Value being co-created between consumers and producers of product alike. For instance, we can see that overnight, consumers could change their preferences between owning music or streaming music, between a CD, a vinyl, or between listening to music and attending a music concert. This last bit, listening to music or attending a music concert, if you have remember relevant literature, is the so-called Bowie theorem, because David Bowie was the first to brought this concept of substitution between listening to music and attending a concert forward. Very interesting concept in competition law terms. Product substitution. Product substitution is something that should be taken into consideration when defining relevant product markets for music, because consumers think that owning music or streaming music and attending a concert belong to the same product market, since they substitute between them. Very interesting theoretical concept, but does it have any implications? This is what we are actually trying to find out with this project. Overall, from the demand side, let's say that we have innovation in what the firms are offering, right? From the demand side, we have innovation in terms of what is the consumer approach to the products that are being offered to them and what they think are direct substitutes. So overall, the assessment would be a great flow of ideas and a great flow of innovative products and innovative responses. very well until this part of the story. We have to see what the competition authorities, how the competition authorities, let's say, perceive these ever-changing business models, let's say. In order to do so, in my research, I tried to dive into merger and antitrust cases regarding the music industries from the 60s up until the recent merger cases between publishers and record companies for the past 10 years. The first case that was brought to my attention was from 1962, an antitrust investigation into Colombia from the Federal Trade Commission. The case started in 1962 and ended in 1969. One could say that it took them quite a lot of time to reach any agreement of what was happening in the music industries. They were described as perplexed and too difficult to understand by the Federal Trade Commission themselves. And actually, this specific case was an investigation into Section 5 of the Federal Trade Commission Act, which is unfair commerce practices interstate in the states. This is not the interesting part per se. The interesting part is that for the first time, Federal Trade Commission recognizes the stakeholders of the music industry in a competition law framework. And the stakeholders are, of course, the manufacturers of recordings, the publishers, the record companies, but there is somebody missing, and we will get to that somebody later on. What I'm trying to say here is that the competition authorities completely aligned with the business model of the music industries as we knew it at the time. I've used the example of one of the most important poets of the 20th century, Smokey Robinson. Most famous singer-songwriter assigns his rights to Motown. Motown manufactures the recording. The recording reaches not the consumer, it reaches the retailer. That's the important bit for competition law purposes. The consumer is not part of the supply chain for music. The retailer is. This is, although this might sound a bit weird to all of the people interested in investigating the music industry in competition law terminology, it makes perfect sense. And in business law terminology, up until that point, it made perfect sense because the consumer was a passive consumer of hit music. Even though we're talking about niche genres such as jazz, rock and roll, rap, they were all incorporated, and once they passed the corporate threshold, they were marketed as hit music targeted to as wide an audience as possible. This case completely reflects this business model. Not mentioning the end consumer, just mentioning the retailer as the end of the supply chain for music. Many years have passed, let's say, from the 1960s, of course. The record companies, as we know, grew to the point of the multinational record company comprising of both a publishing, a recording scale, and all other corporate activities brought into one corporate umbrella. And this had been the business model as we knew it up until Napster that was identified yesterday. Of course, as we know and as we saw in the previous slides, digitization brought forward a revolution, not only in terms of consumption of music, but also in terms of supply of music, in terms of business modeling. This is why Create exists, to begin with, to see what's happening with the business models of the creative industries that were changed so drastically. There was the Wall Street Journal, actually, that called the changes in the music industry seismic some years ago. Exactly that was what's happening. Let's move forward to merger cases for regarding either the recording or the publishing sector of the past 10 years, starting from Sony BMG, reaching Universal BMG music publishing case. This is what the competition authorities, this is how the competition authorities treat the market for copyrights. And it makes perfect sense because they say different types of rights exist, of course, in copyrights, each of which might constitute a direct market as they are commercialized through distinct channels, address different needs, and apply for different uses. What they're trying to say is exactly what we saw in the example of Smokey Robinson. We can identify two supply chains for music, one for the publisher and one that reaches the retailer. The supply chain for the publisher would end with the singer-songwriter assigning the rights, and the other one, the other supply chain for music, would end with the recording being brought to the retailer, the end. It was in the specific case that the European Commission actually said the fact that less CDs or less vinyl records are being ordered does not change the fact that they're being ordered by the retailer, and let's name them X. If the X happens to be lesser than what it was 10, 15 years ago, it doesn't matter for competition law purposes, according to the European Commission and according to everybody else. In a nutshell, is there a competition law problem with this reading of the music industries? We have seen that we are facing changes in business models brought forward by consumer behavior, value co-creation, the consumer being able to substitute between products, strong product substitutability for the demand for music side exists. The end consumer, however, is not present in the supply chain for music. Dealing in intellectual property rights in music does not include the end consumer, as you can see in all merger cases up until very recently. It's exactly what we said, and it's exactly what we can see in adjacent industries, such as the live music industry, the example of Live Nation, Ticketmaster, also excluding the end consumer. The market identified was the market for the provision of tickets. And just this, even though Live Nation and Ticketmaster were offering such a broad range of products. This is consistent, however, with the mandate that requires the competition authorities to define a very, very narrow product market in order to identify, to assess competition in them. Apparently, from an industrial business model perspective, it fails to take into consideration what is actually happening in the market. Can this lead to problems, to competition law problems, to actual legal problems? You love, maybe it does, right? Do we need a new reading for the music industries that could be extended to be a reading of the overall creative industries? I believe so. And there has been precedent. May I remind you of the approach the competition authorities have taken towards the markets for innovation generally, where competition is found to be not in the market, but for the market, since we don't know what the final product might be to begin with. And this is the comparison that this research project will try to actually conduct. The overall question, of course, being, do the competition authorities need to read the music industries differently? Do I have time for that?
You're good.
Well, this was the overall idea. Of course, it's an asset project, as I said. The hypothesis is there. And any input, feedback, or approach would be much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
We have time for questions. Please.
There are a couple of quick questions.
Yes, please.
Why are you talking about substitutability? I mean, I would have thought that there's a lot of complementarity between these things. People who buy somebody's record want to go to the concert.
Since this is the theory, based on economic theory, reading the Bowie theorem and also reading Connolly and Kruger, they are the first economists to have identified that maybe we're not talking about ancillary products, we're talking about substitutes. Based on this theory, I'm trying to see whether it is an investigation of whether it applies or not. But since the theory exists, I think it's worth proving or disproving it. That's why we're talking about substitutability. It might end up not being substitutability, of course, but we will get there with research.
Okay. I wouldn't call their work theoretical. I would call it more empirical.
But doctrinal it is, basically.
Any other quick questions?
Well, can I also point out that there were, monopolies and mergers commissions in the UK, reports on the supply of music, on music publishing, and collecting societies. Yeah. So, but the supply of recorded music, I think it was 1996. That's really quite an important, because in fact it also resulted in actual disintegration.
Yes. No, it will be taken into consideration, certainly. We need all the literature we can get our hands on, of course, definitely. But these are concepts that need to be addressed.
Just a quick reinforcement of Ruth's point. It does seem that Connolly and Kruger evidence is about, from the consumer's perspective, live music and recorded music are complements. What Colleen Kruger are saying is that as a business strategy, if I can't make money from one, I use the other. It's a substitute in production in some sense, but they're almost surely complements in consumption. So you might want to think about what implications that would have for your analysis.
Yes, of course, definitely. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.